Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. I think the following show could have been a series, Once Upon a Time. It's called The Croupier, and the first show is one that I refer to as The Roman. Here's Dan Schindler and Melinda Maines with Michael Moki O'Reilly as The Roman.
Mesdames et messieurs, place your bets.
The American Radio Theater presents a recreation from the days of old-time radio, The Croupier, with a gripping story of man's eternal conflict with fate, written by Milton Geiger.
Mesdames et messieurs, place your bets. I am the croupier. I spin the wheel of life. You, the players, make your fortune, your future, what you will. It is for you to choose the path. Jealousy, envy, hatred, fear, happiness, love, peace. These are the dark and the bright colors of the soul. So, mesdames et messieurs, the wheel of life spins. Place your bets. 13 black.
I've won!
He won. The rather unusual player at my right. The Roman. Yes, a Roman warrior in brass helmet and steel armor. Here, at my wheel of fate. Now! Oh, but many kinds from many times come to play against me. What is his desperate chance? This armored soldier from another age. Listen. Listen to his thoughts.
Mercy, peace, redemption. Gods, let me die.
He asks for peace, redemption, death. When others plead for life, what does he mean? Why this dark choice? Let's see. Go with him to another place than this. The ocean. Night. Fog off the coast of California. A great ship stands motionless in the milky sea. On the deck stands a solitary figure. The fog is thick. Yet he knows that two people are in the water, tired of swimming, limp in their life preservers. He knows.
Gods of war and peace that guarded over imperial Rome, mercy. I have warred and you have smiled upon me. Grant me, gods, peace, then. A man and a woman float upon the sea. Let her have mercy upon thy captain. Grant me redemption. Let her have pity upon my age-long suffering. Let her redeem me, gods!
We'd been in the water for hours, Lorna and I, ever since a sudden squall had swamped our cabin cruiser off San Clemente. And taking the trip, I had hoped once again that by being together and vastly alone, my wife and I would be drawn together, that the barrier between us might melt. But no. Dennis had always been there, in her mind, in her heart, and I, her husband, would never replace the memory of Dennis. The very destruction of our boat had seemed a token that further effort was useless. I don't know how long we'd been in the water, when that immense hulk loomed out of the fog. A ship! Lorna! Lorna! A ship!
Huh. Where? I don't...
Straight ahead! Anchored! Ahoy! Ship! Ahoy there!
No answer.
Ahoy there! Stand by for survivors!
Nothing.
Ahoy there! Survivors overside!
What's the matter with them?
I don't know. This is queer. I don't know.
Kurt, they've dropped us a rope ladder.
And time, too. Come on, let's get out of this. We seem to climb for miles before we reached the top of the ladder and the deck of that silent ship. No one greeted us. No one.
And not a light showing.
The wide, unobstructed expanse of deck, the great size of the vessel slowly forced one bewildering conviction upon me. We were on an aircraft carrier.
An aircraft carrier?
It's got to be.
Well, what would an aircraft carrier be doing hiding out in this fog? In peacetime?
I don't know.
And where is everybody?
I don't know. Follow me, but watch yourself. Stay close.
Where to?
Below. The captain's quarters. Somebody must be on board. Here, maybe this would be it. Stop here. There's some light around this bulkhead door.
Knock.
Here goes.
Again.
I can't understand it.
Knock again, Kurt.
Yeah.
Nothing.
We're going in anyhow.
Be careful.
Anybody home? Hello in there.
It's empty.
Come on. Shipshape. And deserted.
Kirk, look at this.
Find something?
On the desk. This parchment scroll.
Parchment? Scroll?
Yellow with age.
Yes.
And someone's been reading it. You see, it's held down by weights, top and bottom, to keep it unrolled.
It's written in Latin. Very indistinct, but...
Can you read it?
I think so. Ye who have now read the manifold curses that... Lorna, this is amazing. In demonology, this parchment is known as the malediction scroll.
No.
Its very existence has been questioned, but here it is on a modern aircraft carrier. The parchment of the curses.
Read it, Kirk.
Oh, let's see. Ye who have read the manifold curses that rest upon the bones of evil, know now the great curse. There is a Roman who in the time of the Emperor Hadrian was a warrior of the first javelin of centurions. And this centurion, this captain of captains, did commit this black deed. Smiling, showing the hand of friendship, he did treacherously murder his friend and dearest benefactor. And when this act was done, a darkness fell, and with it, the curse. Let him, the Roman, never rest, even after life. But let him forever roam the earth to haunt the scenes of treachery, wherever treachery in any manner has befallen, until one thing only free him, which he, the Roman, knows. So be it.
Oh, that's enough, Kirk.
That's all.
It's like a dream. It is a dream, isn't it?
Here's the ship's log on the desk. And listen to these entries. Is there no pity? No balm in Gilead? And the next, it goes on forever.
How strange.
And the last entry. Torment.
Torment.
And that's all.
But what does it mean? Whose ship is it? What nation?
I don't know.
Who wrote in that log?
I don't know.
I wrote.
Kirk!
The bulkhead door slammed shut behind us. And we turned. A man stood across the cabin. A man who wore the plumed brass helmet, the steel armor and broadsword, and the scarlet cloak of a centurion of the legions of Publius Hadrianus, almost 2,000 years before.
I wrote.
Who are you?
You do not know.
Tell me.
There is a Roman who, in the time of the Emperor Hadrian...
No!
So be it.
See here, this is enough of trumped-up mystery and clowning around in rented arbor.
I tell you, I am that captain of the maledictions. It was I who threw you the ladder, no other.
Who else is on this ship?
No other.
It's a dream.
Dream without end. A timeless wandering without let or surcease or pity. When you wake, consider how you dreamed of the accursed Roman. Rest well, you who can rest.
Kirk, it isn't true. It's
a dream. We'll just go to sleep in the bunks here and very likely wake up in the bunks of our cabin cruiser.
I don't know. Well, I hope so.
Woman?
Yes?
Listen to me.
Who?
The Roman.
Roman?
You know my destiny from the Scroll of the Curses. To haunt the scenes of monstrous infamy and mischief. Though I be dust on some forgotten battlefield, or clay in moldering catacombs forgotten, yet must I walk the earth and tread the sea to haunt with my unhappy ghost the scenes of treachery.
Go away.
Woman.
Go, I say.
Pity me, for only through the true compassion of a woman hurt by treachery may deliverance come. For crime against the race of man is crime against woman, the mother of the race. You, woman, who have suffered loss by treachery, you can save me.
Oh, no.
Pity me.
Murderer.
Mercy.
Yes. Yes, I pity you. No, go.
Useless. Others have said I pity you and wept, but terror moved their lips as it moves yours, and I a captive still. Useless.
Useless.
Lorna.
Useless.
Lorna, wake up.
What? What?
You've been nightmaring it again.
Oh. Well, then it was all a dream.
I had to butte myself.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
My dream included an aircraft carrier.
Aircraft carrier?
With a Roman soldier on board.
Well, that's what I dreamed.
Oh? Well, that's one thing we have in common anyhow.
Kirk.
Our dreams.
Don't.
Sorry.
Kirk, listen.
Engines?
Yes.
Then we're still dreaming.
I don't think so, Kirk. I think we're still on that ship. And there is a ship. And that Roman and...
And we're moving. The ship's underway.
The Roman has placed his bet. He plays for peace, redemption. Let's see how it all ends. Lorna and Kirk come up on deck. The wet fog stings their eyes. A wild wind hisses about the speeding ship. The wind and the fog. The wind. The wind.
It must be a dream. No ship ever went this fast.
Lorna, the whole thing is nothing more than a tricked-up version of the Flying Dutchman legend. The blaspheming Dutchman doomed to round the horn forever until a woman's love should save him. For Dutchman read Roman, for woman's love read pity.
Well, explain this ship.
The obvious explanation. Radio control.
And the Roman?
A madman.
The malediction scroll?
A forgery. Or the real article that may have inspired our tin soldier's masquerade.
The speed of this ship?
Fog distorts human perceptions. Also, we just may be aboard a top naval secret. And that's an idea.
What?
The ship's radio. Any signal at all would attract the Navy's attention if this were an experimental craft. Let's find the radio room. We found the radio room. The equipment there was a long, long way from the ham outfit I used to have in my attic. My fumbling signal went out on a random wavelength. Then I stopped. I stopped and turned around and saw him. He was there. in the doorway. The Roman.
Fool.
Kirk!
Steady, girl.
Fool.
How long were you standing there?
Infinitely.
What do you intend to do, anyhow?
Do?
How did you get aboard this ship to begin with?
How did I board the blood ships of antiquity? How did I pierce the walls and iron barricades of beleaguered cities, of the Tower of London, of the innermost hells of man's treachery unto man? Why do I roam the silent city destitute of life? Why do I tread among the armored skeletons, their mouths stopped with the wormy bread of black betrayal? The curse. Tonight, I pleaded for compassion. Tonight, again, I was denied.
Oh, I said I pitied you.
Words, lip service, pity spawned my fear, not born of true compassion.
You murdered your friend.
Even so. But the glacier powders mountains in its own good time. The river cuts a channel in the rock. The fiery suns cool and darken unto ash. All things yield to time except the stain of one dark act that the torrent of centuries cannot wash away. And yet, a gentleman, they say, stood on a Mount of Olives and said, pity, love, forgive. Was it in Gaul?
No, Jerusalem.
It may be so. I remember the words and you the place, and scarcely anyone the meaning or the execution. Scarcely anyone.
He's mad, all right.
No, Kirk, there's more to it than that. The things he says and knows and pretends not to know and that terrible hurt melancholy of his, it's so strange. Like now, this moment, it seems as though we were surrounded and trapped by a vast, stagnant waitingness, a stillness. Listen. Stealthy and waiting.
Yes.
Kirk, the engines have stopped.
So they have.
Let's go up on deck.
Why?
Quickly, I don't know why, before it's too late. Hurry, hurry.
Wait, Lorna, he's on deck.
Out there, pacing.
Here he comes.
He's in a dreadful state.
Enough. Gods, have I not endured enough? Let me return to mine own time and to the dust of my comrades. An end to all this.
I'm going to talk to that man. You, Roman.
Kirk.
You, whoever you are.
I have told you who I am.
That's not enough. We can't swallow that story of yours.
You will have proof.
When?
Presently.
Kirk. Kirk?
I did not will myself upon this ship or all the others, and there have been many others. Galleys, triremes, tetraremes, the spice ships of the Indies, the caravels of Cathay, the Armada, privateers, men of war, an aircraft carrier. Many ships and many wheels have carried me to my single destiny and my countless destinations. The Inquisition. The place of the faggot where Joan of Arc found agony and sainthood. The cell of treachery where Cortez parleyed with unlucky Montezuma. And who, in the wake of civil strife, saw the armies sheath the sword and unsheathed his sword? Why, I, the Roman, where one named Lincoln sighed and closed his eyes forever. And high upon the windy battlements of Castle Dunsinane, I walked the castellated walls, my sword in hand, while filthy carrion nightbirds crossed the moon, and heard again beneath, forevermore, the eerie cry of Duncan, King of Scotland, by his friend and host Macbeth, most foully murdered. So the centuries, crowded with perfidy, I follow my evil and unremitting star, to haunt the scene of monstrous mischief and betrayal. So the centuries, so tonight.
Roman, what happened here?
Leave this ship.
Leave it?
You will not perish, mark me.
Oh, that's reassuring.
I say go.
You're crazy.
The time is at hand. Listen.
Wind.
Yes, master. My sword, master. And I am unredeemed. And treachery unpurified, unpurged, lives festering upon the corrupt earth. I have failed.
Poor Matt. Poor Matt.
Gods! Is it true? Am I delivered? The woman spoke and the sword broke from my hand. Gods! A woman's soul spoke and did not counsel with her fear but spoke in pity. And I am redeemed! Shout, legions! Rejoice, ye maniples of Triari! Receive me, dust of my yesterdays! Welcome me, comrades! Lift high the golden eagles of great Rome and shout! Thy captain is restored to thee.
The deck shuddered beneath our feet. The ship was shivering in every plate and rivet. Strange blue flames glowed coldly, eerily, from the superstructure of the ship.
St. Elmo's fire.
We were sinking. The carrier was going down.
Stand by thy spears, O legions, centurions, thy brother, javelins, thy leader. Comrade who died by my hand, be comrade again to me. I am delivered. I am delivered. Senatus populus que Romanus, the Senate, the people, and the armies of Rome. All hail! All hail! All hail.
Lorna, we're sinking. Jump clear. Jump!
More coffee, Mrs. Hardesty?
No, thank you, Commander.
Mr. Hardesty?
Fine now, thanks.
Hey, you weren't fine when we picked you up in the water early this morning.
Oh, thank heaven for the Coast Guard.
Guess we both passed out in the water.
Or I had a nightmare to end all nightmares.
You did?
Well, seems we boarded a mysterious aircraft carrier in the fog.
So did I.
Was there a Roman haunting some scene of treachery?
Why, yes.
I forgave him for his own treachery. Long ago?
Poor man, you said, and broke the spell.
That's very odd.
Yes, isn't it?
Where were you shipwrecked last night?
Off San Clemente.
But that's impossible.
Why?
You'd better let me show you something. Come to the porthole with me. Look out there. Is that coastline at all familiar to either of you?
Not to me.
It's Diamond Head.
Diamond Head? Lorna, that's ridiculous in the light of what...
It's Pearl Harbor.
But only last night.
She's right, Mr. Hardesty.
Dennis was killed there, in the bombing. I was with him.
Pearl Harbor.
Commander, may I be alone with my husband for a moment?
Of course, Mrs. Hardesty. Of course.
Kirk?
Lorna?
Something happened, Kirk. Something made it happen. The need to forget... To forgive if we're to live in peace on Earth. So long as bitterness over Dennis's death stayed with me, I had to remain true to his memory, but I forgave the Roman.
Yes?
And with him, forgave everything. For forgiveness, like peace, must be for all. And I forgave everything when I forgave him and became free myself. I'm free, Kirk. For you. For life. I'm free.
She comes into his arms. Together they look out over the fateful harbor and imagine the drone of bombers and the thick smoke of disaster. But somewhere a legion glitters in the ancient sun and utters a soundless shout and raises its spears. And one who had perished by treachery stands at the fore and offers his hand again to the one who had killed him, welcoming him home, forgiving his brother.
The American Radio Theater has just presented the first episode of a unique series, The Croupier. Every week at this time, the croupier spins his wheel of life, for a strange drama of man against fate, the croupier.
Mesdames et messieurs, place your bets.
Produced by Joy Jackson and directed by Marge Lutton, you heard Greg Border as the croupier, Moki O'Reilly as the Roman, Dan Schindler as Kirk Hardesty, Melinda Maines as Lorna Hardesty, Pat McNally as Lieutenant Commander, live sound effects by Penny Swanberg, music by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. The original broadcast was on September 21, 1949, on ABC. Vincent Price was the Roman, with Margaret Brayton, Dan O'Herlihy, Howard Culver, and Paul Fries. The Croupier was written and directed by Milton Geiger. This is ART, the American Radio Theater, and I am your announcer, Kim Turner.
Let's listen to some music from the days of old-time radio.
The musical genius runs rampant, and everybody knows what time it is. Well, you're at one now. Yes, you're at Eddie Condon's Jazz Concert. 1,600 of us are here at Town Hall in New York City, all straining at the leash, waiting for the jazz virtuosi to break loose. It's all going to take place under the deft direction of Mr. Condon himself, the boy with a fabulous ear, the infallible guitar, and the incorruptible conviction that there are only two kinds of music, bad and good. Well, here goes to some of the good kinds. Ready, Eddie? Okay, contact.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Condon.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you, Fred Robbins. That little thing we just played with Georgia Brown and the participants, Gene Schrader on the piano, Bob Casey on the bassie, Pee Wee Russell on the clarionet, Joe Grasso on the drums, Maxie Kinesi on the cornet, and Miss Mole on the trombone. Speaking of Miss Mole, by the way, did we introduce everybody there? I guess so. We're going to do a thing here called Plague of My Heart. This song's so old, we can't find out who wrote it. Want to take it, Gene, 4/5? Sure.
Thanks, Eddie. That's okay, John. Now, look at here, John.
Well, shake. I am shaking.
I have been.
I'm not nervous.
Well, frankly, I am.
You're not nervous, John?
Frankly, I am. You see, Eddie, this is only the third time I've been on the radio.
Oh, have you been on before?
Incredible, isn't it? See, I'm a very awkward guy. I don't know what to do with my hands. So when I went on Bing Crosby's show, Bing let me play the mandolin.
Mandolin? Well, you won't find one of those things around here.
Spoken like a guitar player. Anyway, the second time I went on the radio...
Second time? After playing the mandolin, they allowed you on again?
I'll ignore that.
I don't blame you.
As I say, the second time I went on the air, I was a guest on Information Please.
Information Please? Who did you give your hands on Information Please?
Oscar Levant's throat.
Well, we had no Levant around here, but we also had no mandolin.
Just occurred to me, that sounds like a plug for a tune of Oscar's. Lady, play your mandolin. But it isn't.
Okay, John. Now hold on to your script with both hands, and we'll take care of that unfinished business. You see, John, the boys and I thought it'd be nice if you just drop around here and say a few words of what you actually think about this meeting.
Well, I don't think it's particularly nice of me, although I could be at beautiful Belmont or the ball game.
But you get up too late for that sort of stuff. Now, look at here, John. Suppose you just tell us, really now, on the square, what do you think of it?
Well, Eddie, I'm not a very eloquent guy either. And this music is something I like to be eloquent about.
Eloquent, for instance?
Well, I spent a great deal of time and quite a little money listening to it.
What about that money? How much time did you spend, John?
Now, that's hard to say. But when I started listening to jazz, Frankie was just a kid.
Frankie? What's he do? Frankie Sinatra, you mean?
Gosh, no. Frankie Trumbauer.
Well, that wasn't exactly yesterday. Tell us some more, John. Really on the square. Now, this time for sure, why do you like this music?
That's where I need to be eloquent. Why do I like it? Well, it's us, Eddie. It's you and me and the cop outside, who probably doesn't understand why all these people came to town hall this afternoon. There are a lot of pretty good guys all over the world listening into this swell music. If you ask them why they like it, they'd probably hesitate before they could give you an answer. And in a curious way, I think the answer they'd eventually give just about covers it, for us as well as for them. I think the answer they'd give is that it reminds them of home.
Well, John, I'm inclined to believe you're on the square about that.
So we like it, they like it, so let's hear it.
Well, let's do something about this now. Thank you very much, John O'Hara. Well, having read the first script of my life, we're going to turn on Jimmy James P. Johnson. Hold it, Jimmy. Jimmy's the boy that plays the piano and the right way, played it all his life that way, and here we go. He's going to play the Carolina Shout. Go ahead, James. I thank you. Thank you also, ladies and gentlemen. About Jimmy, you know, anytime you want to hear Jimmy, when the sun's already set or set, you can come to Pied Piper's down in Barrel Street in the village, and you won't have any trouble down there. Max has got a little band. Jimmy Johnson plays the piano. What more do you want? The whiskey you'll have to bring yourself. Now, look at here. Billy Butterfield's here, and he's got his cornet. He's going to play a song written by a boy Neon. He's out in Omaha, Nebraska, in the basement of some hotel out there. His name is John DeVries, and the name of the song is Wherever There's Love, There's You and I. Billy, are you ready? One way or another, pro or con, you can address all that stuff, comments and complaints, to Eddie Conn and care of the Blue Network, someplace called Radio City. It's in New York here. I've heard of it. Now, Lips Page is here, and he's got a little song he wrote himself, and he's going to sing it himself, and he's going to play it himself. Lips, I want you to do that special hit of yours. What's the name of that song, Lips?
Uncle Sam Blues.
What's the name of it?
Uncle Sam Blues.
Take it, Lip.
Take your man. Uncle Sam ain't no woman, but he sure can take your man. Women wringing their hands and crying all over the land. Yes, I know you pray for me, baby. Pray for me every night. Yes, I know you pray for me, baby. pray for me every night. With you in my corner, God knows everything's all right. Well, Sis and Tojo sure got themselves in a jam. They gotta go now, crossing up my Uncle Sam.
By the way, it was recorded by Lips and a few of the boys here. It was V-Disc and it's being heard right this minute in the South Pacific, North Pacific, Deep Atlantic, and a few other places. So hooray for Lips and that one. Liza, I see you're close by. You want to sing a song for us, aren't you?
I am.
Well, who wrote this song? What's the name of it?
This is Someone to Watch Over Me by George Gershwin.
I thought it was George. Got a fella, I understand. Well, are you about ready to go?
Just the time.
Take it.
There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone who watched over me. I'm a little lamb who thank you.
tell him please to put on some speed. Follow my lead. Oh, someone to watch over me.
Thank you, Liza. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Liza Mao. And that background was written by a fellow named Bobby Hackett. Thanks to Bobby. He doesn't come from Mexico City, I'm sure. Do you want to start this thing off? Boom, boom. Gene Frater's got it now on the other piano. Again. Gene Frater is going to take it again on the piano. Billy Butterfield now. Tell these people of something I have in my mind. It concerns next week's show. This goes on for 13 in a row. We're the Police. We're going to have Rex Stewart here from Duke Ellington's band, Sonny Greer from Duke Ellington's band, John Kirby from John Kirby's band, and a gang of other guys, many of the fellows you've heard today. If you find it dull, write in. If you find it otherwise, write in also. Twice on the ladder. I'll look at here. Do you want to take it, Lip? You got it, Lip? Boom! Take it, Lips.
Join us again next week at the same time for another blast of fresh air time. We'll have more top layer hot artists. Our guest commentator will be George Frazier. Eddie Condon's Jazz Concert is produced by Ernest Anderson. Your announcer is Fred Robbins. This is the Blue Network.
Gee, that's all the time I've got for today. Please stop by our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more podcasts. You know, we put up a new show every month. Hey, on April 29th, stop by radioatofthepast.org for their old-time radio marathon. It's 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, to 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. And new prizes will be awarded every hour. That's radioatofthepast.org, April 29th, in the Fred Bertelson Room. See you there.